Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 110, Sourdough. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the show that's all about home cooking and getting in the kitchen, having more fun, learning new things. Well, today we have a twist on the home cooking angle. We're going to be talking about actually some baking things today. I'm going to be joined by Maurizio Leo of theperfectloaf.com, and we're going to talk about sourdough baking. Real quick, before we get to that, I want to remind you that you can always send me an email. I'm happy to hear from you. If you have any questions or show ideas, send me a note over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. And of course, you can always find me on Twitter at TKC Podcast and Facebook at facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast. You know, I've mentioned on the show before that I'm not a real big baker. I like to bake, but I'm not that good at it. At least I don't think so. My wife here in the family is much more of a baker than I am, and she's been on the show in episodes way back. But I'm excited today because Maurizio of The Perfect Loaf is going to come on, and we're going to talk about getting started with sourdough baking, bread specifically. What I think is really great about this is making sourdough connects to a process that's basically been unchanged for a millennia. I mean, when you make sourdough bread at home, you're essentially following the same steps, doing the exact same thing that people in ancient Egypt did, or probably even older than that. And it's a surprisingly simple process. It takes a little time, it takes a little work and observation, but there's nothing really complicated per se about the act of making sourdough bread. And I think a lot of times home cooks are turned off by it because baking bread at home, A, can seem a little complicated and intimidating. And B, we have so many bakeries and or grocery stores that have great bakery departments that it seems really easy just to go to the store and buy whatever kind of bread you want or need, which of course is perfectly fine. But as this is a show about cooking at home, we want to dive into the steps that you can follow to get in the kitchen and try sourdough yourself. And my hope is by the end of the conversation with Maurizio here, you'll be inspired and feel a little more confident about tackling bread making at home. And I know some of you already are. You've written me and you've told me you've tried sourdough yourself. So in this conversation, Maurizio is going to give a little bit about his background, so I'm not going to go into that detail right now. But we're going to talk about what is sourdough, how is it different than other breads like flatbreads or, you know, all of those loaves of bread you can find in the grocery store, how to make your own sourdough starter. There's a lot of interesting mystery and mystique, at least I think so, around sourdough starters. So we're going to break that down. We'll talk about equipment, some tips and tricks. So by the end of this, I hope you are inspired to take a weekend and give this a crack. Now, I've put the show notes for everything we talk about in this episode over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/110. Go there and you'll find links to find Maurizio online, his great website, The Perfect Loaf, some selected articles that he's written and his social media. And I've also put links for the other resources we talked about, some of the books, things like that. So without further ado, I bring you Maurizio Leo of theperfectloaf.com to talk sourdough. Well, I'm here with Maurizio Leo from theperfectloaf.com, and we're going to talk today about sourdough bread specifically. So Maurizio, thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
So I've had requests for this in the past. Actually, I've had a couple of listeners specifically write in and talk about kind of they're getting into the adventure of making sourdough and doing the whole sourdough starter thing at home. So I thought, well, I haven't really focused too much on I've never focused on sourdough bread. I haven't focused on bread in general. And really, in my household, my wife is kind of the baker of the family. I like to cook a lot more because I feel it's just I can screw it up a lot less. but I think it's time to kind of dive headlong into this whole sourdough thing because I think I'm seeing a resurgence of this, this in the food community. So why don't we start just a little bit before we get into the mechanics of sourdough bread? You know, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you came to get into focus on sourdough, and a little bit about your background.
Sure. I guess going kind of way back, I grew up here in the States, but my family's pretty hardcore Italian, and you know, we cooked our own food pretty much every day at home, and we didn't eat out too often as a kid. So I think I had that kind of stereotypical grandma who was at home like making pasta while I was at school, and then you know, making risotto or something like that. And then so I kind of got imbued with a sense for good food, even though I didn't really realize it. And then also my dad, when he came here from Italy, he started a restaurant here in town, and he still works there today. It's been going for a good 36 years now. And I grew up there at the restaurant. So I, you know, after school, I went there, and my brother and I hung out kind of with all the cooks and the waiters and that kind of thing. So I was always around food. I think I didn't really realize it. I kind of knew eventually I'd kind of get back into it in some way. And I actually went to school for software engineering. So I'm an engineer, and you know, I love building things, and I kind of lost touch with food and making things with my hands for a while. And then it was around 2012 or 2011 or 12 that I started baking, and I'd never baked anything, you know, leavened before, just simple stuff in the kitchen. But I was given a book on sourdough, and I started reading the book, and I kind of got just taken by the whole process and the science part of it, which really appealed to me. And then kind of the legacy and the craft part of it, which really appealed to me. So it was kind of two sided. And I think if it was just, if the book came bread with like commercial yeast, I don't know that I would have been that inspired by it. I think it was, there's something about like harnessing the way wild yeast and beneficial bacteria kind of come together and leaven and flavor bread. So I was at home, I worked from home. So I kind of had some time to myself, and I started just wanting to get my hands going again. And so I started baking with that book, and you know, it started out like baking once every other week, and then it started like once a week, and then it was like every other day, and then it was like every day. So nowadays I bake pretty much every day from home, whether it's on, whether I'm testing a formula, something I'm coming up with, or just, you know, a large batch for my family here. And so it kind of escalated that way. And I started my website because back then there really wasn't a lot of information about baking sourdough at home. And so I created my site to kind of journal what I had learned, and everything was learned. I never took any classes. It was just trial and error and me trying to figure out, how can I adjust the inputs to get the desired output that I want. And so that's where I am today. I pretty much got my hands in and got started with it.
Yeah, that's excellent. You and I actually have a very similar kind of food journey. I mean, it sounds just like my life in a weird mirrored sort of way, because I grew up, you know, with home cooked meals. My mom cooked all the time, but she was also I guess you could say a food entrepreneur, where she had food establishments pretty much, or worked in food establishments or owned them pretty much when I grew up my entire life. So I spent a lot of time hanging out at the family diner, you know, when I was coming home after school and doing that sort of a thing. And, you know, for me and my family, the process of making food at home means more than just, you know, nourishment. It means time and having a, you know, laughs together and just that kind of family thing that you don't get when you go out to restaurants and eat as a family. So I think, you know, what I would love for listeners who are listening to this, if they're curious about getting in the kitchen and making bread, specifically sourdough, which we're going to talk about, I think if we can get out of this conversation and give somebody kind of the wheels to get in the kitchen and experiment, maybe this is a good project for them just to kind of tackle. Just give it a shot. We mentioned before we recorded, you have readers that find it intimidating and then get into it and find it's not so bad after all. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about things like sourdough starter and all that. But before we even get there, it's probably really important just to kind of define what we're talking about, because I know there's all sorts of different types of bread, right? And you alluded to it just now that sourdough is kind of naturally fermented bread.
Right.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I kind of view two other categories of bread. One would be, I guess say it's unnaturally fermented, but that's bread where you use yeast, like you mentioned, for example. And then another category, which I guess you would call quick bread, which would be chemically leavened bread, you know, baking soda, baking powder, acid. And I guess maybe there's another category, unleavened bread. But does that sound about right?
Yeah, I'd say there's kind of those three categories. There's Well, there's two main categories, I guess. There would be leavened and then non-leavened. And then in the leavened ones, you've got commercial yeast, then you've got sourdough, and then there's kind of a little subcategory where you have some breads that are that use both commercial yeast and then natural leavening. And then there's quick breads, which are like baking soda, baking powder, right?
And just to be clear, I love them all. So
yeah, they're all good.
Talk a little bit about sourdough bread specifically. So how does sourdough bread differ? Like if I go to the store and I just buy a loaf of whole grain artisan bread or whatever, let's not even say sourdough. How is sourdough different fundamentally from that?
Well, I mean, you can totally buy sourdough bread at the store. And of course there are bakeries everywhere that do natural leavening. But the main differences between sourdough and bread that's made with commercial yeast is that sourdough is, you're kind of harnessing the wild yeasts and the beneficial bacteria that are just present everywhere, but most notably on the grain itself, so actually on the flour. And you're using that to create, you kind of harness that and you make a sourdough starter, which is kind of a natural mixture and then a stable mixture of those two that you feed and perpetuate to leaven your bread in the future. Commercial yeast, on the other hand, it's the same bacteria and yeasts, but it's a specific strain that's been created somewhere and then dried, and it's much more potent and powerful than a sourdough. So it usually comes in a packet, and you'll find it in the store, and you know, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that bread, and there's certain applications where commercial yeast, you want it because it adds a certain lightness, a different texture, a different flavor to breads. So it, you know, no way is wrong or right. It's just they're different. And usually with natural leavening and sourdough, the fermentation times for your bread are a lot longer than commercial yeast because it's just not as, maybe powerful is not the right word, but it's just not as vigorous as commercial yeast.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose commercial yeast is probably more predictable in a way.
Yeah, I think it is. I actually don't have a lot of experience commercial yeast. I only use it. I usually will use it if I am trying to follow a formula that calls for it, and then I'll kind of adapt it to something I'm doing that's naturally leavened. But it is a little bit more predictable, and I think that helps bakery. You know, that helps a bakery production schedule in a way. So.
Okay. And I know we kind of had a rough outline of the order, but I think let's switch up the order of what we want to talk about just a little bit, because I think it's natural now to maybe talk about the sourdough starter.
Okay.
And, you know, just given what you just mentioned there, and I know sourdough starter is an interesting thing, because if you go on the internet, for example, and you do research, there seems to be a lot of mystique or mythology around sourdough starter. And as I understand it, sourdough starters can be kept for, you know, as long as you take care of them and quote unquote feed them, they can be kept for decades, right? In fact, I found a link. This is crazy. There's a website, and I'll put the link to this in the show notes, and I'll give the link for everything we talk about here, your website and everything at the top of the show. But apparently you can get samples of sourdough starter that came over on the Oregon Trail, you know, in the mid 1800s. So right. It's kind of fascinating to me. So what exactly is sourdough starter? And then maybe talk a little bit about, you have a great guide on your website about sourdough starter.
Sure. Yeah. So they can pretty much last indefinitely as long as you care for it. So you give it the right temperature range and you feed it, and feeding just means you give it fresh flour and water periodically for the yeast and bacteria to kind of metabolize and continue. It's just like we would eat, right? We need food to survive. Their food is flour. And so, I mean, you'll find people talk about their, you know, decades old starter or whatnot. And I still have the same one that I actually created when I first started baking, which was, I guess, about 6 or 7 years ago now. So, but I don't actually put a lot of stock in the whole like longevity of the starter, and that it, you know, a 100-year-old starter is better than a 1-year-old starter. There may be different strains of yeast and bacteria in the older one. But you can, I know some bakers that make a new starter every single year. They just create a new one from just flour and water. That's it. But when you boil it down, really all it is is kind of what I mentioned previously, in that it's a stable mixture of beneficial bacteria and kind of wild yeast, and each of those performs a different task. Usually, for the most part, the bacteria is what provides kind of that sourness, that flavoring. I mean, and then the yeast is what actually provides the byproduct of the yeast metabolizing sugars and flour is the leavening in the bread. So that's what actually like creates the gas as it's baking and throughout the whole process. And really, it's a pretty simple thing to get one started and maintain one. A lot of people will talk about, you know, should I buy one or should I just create one on my own? And you can buy one. There's plenty of sources online to get one if you like. But for me, I always recommend, you know, why buy it? It takes about a week. It doesn't take a lot of effort. You just need to follow a good guide. And then I feel like when people create their own starter, they're kind of a little bit more invested in everything. They're more invested in the process because it's something they created on their own in their own kitchen. And all it takes is flour, water, and a little bit of time.
And so essentially to make a starter, you're just putting it in some sort of a container, flour, water, and you let the natural yeast in the environment kind of ferment that starter. And then you use a little bit of that each time you make sourdough. Is that how that works?
Yeah, that's right. And so by mixing flour and just raw flour and water together, you're trying to create the right conditions for these beneficial bacteria and yeast to kind of take hold of that mixture, and then they continue to propagate as you give it new flour and water. So once the pH range in that mixture reaches a certain level, then these beneficial ones will take hold and they kind of keep out any bad one, you know, any mold or any bad things that could enter it. And so the process of creating one, you just mix things together, you let it sit for a day or 2 days at a warm temperature. Next day or day after, you kind of discard a large portion of it. You add in some more flour and water, and then you keep doing that for a few days. And eventually you'll notice signs of fermentation in there. You'll see bubbles. It'll start to rise. It'll smell a little sour throughout the day. And then once it takes hold and you see this kind of rise and fall consistently, then you know that at that point it's strong enough to start making your first loaf of bread.
Okay, cool. And is this something you store in the fridge then after you've got it going?
You can store it in the fridge. It depends on how often you're going to bake. I bake very frequently, so I don't keep mine in the fridge at all. It's very temperature dependent. So if your kitchen, and it changes with the seasons, I should say. So if your kitchen is cool, like it's around 70 degrees Fahrenheit, then, you know, you might be able to just feed it once a day, like depending on the ratios of flour and water. If you want real low maintenance, like if you're looking for, you know, like a typical household might just want to bake one or two loaves of bread on the weekend, then yeah, you can use the fridge. You just give it fresh flour and water, put it in the fridge, take it out maybe a day or two before you want to bake and kind of refresh it and get it back up to full strength.
Okay, that's fascinating. And again, I'll put a link to your sourdough starter from scratch on your blog in the show notes. Okay, so let's say we've gotten adventurous and we're making our sourdough starter. So let's kind of circle back a little bit and let's talk about equipment in general. So if I'm not much of a bread baker to begin with, you know, what's kind of the bare minimum I need to get into this? Is this something I can do with stuff I've got around the house, or is there anything really specialized I should get a hold of?
So to really make bread at home, you really don't need very much. I talk about a lot of the tools that I use on my website. And I think some of the tools are important, but they're not 100% necessary. I mean, back in the day when, you know, or if you go to Italy, even a lot of places these days, they just do everything by feel and by look and touch. So you don't need to have anything, but I think if I were to recommend one tool for your kitchen that will really help increase the consistency and set you kind of on the right path, it would be a kitchen scale. So anything that I can measure in, I do everything by grams. That really helps. Otherwise, you're kind of, you know, measuring flour by volume, you know, a scoop of this or a scoop of that. It's pretty inaccurate because the volume, when you try to scoop out flour, it can, you know, like how much is it compacting inside of your cup measure? You know what I mean? So I'd say a scale helps quite a bit. From there, if you can get like a Dutch oven, just basically a big sealed pot, then that will create the right environment for your bread to rise in the oven. And those two things, maybe a bench knife, what they call a bench knife, it's kind of like a metal blade that lets you cut the dough, but even that's not absolutely necessary. So, I mean, that really is it. I can go on with the best tools like a thermometer and a plastic scraper and then proofing baskets, but when you boil it down, I'd say just a scale and a mixing bowl and you're pretty good to go.
Yeah, and of course, those are tools that are great just to have in the kitchen anyway. I mean, whether you're making bread or not, a kitchen scale is so, so handy to have around.
Right.
Okay, so that sounds fairly simple. So let's talk about just some general tips and tricks for making sourdough bread. Is there kind of like a mother recipe or a standard recipe that you can vary and experiment in the kitchen, or do you kind of have to take each recipe as they come? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see what you mean. Well, I think that kind of brings forth a good point. For people that are just beginning, I would say, you know, find that one recipe that looks great to you, or, you know, the results look like what you want to eat. And I'd say if you're just starting, stick to that recipe for a little while. There's a huge tendency to kind of jump around like, oh, today I want whole wheat bread, or tomorrow I want, you know, a white loaf of bread, or I want to try Kamut, or I want to try, you know, and I did that when I first started baking, and it's fun. But the problem is that because you're jumping around so much, it's very hard to get consistency and to figure out parts of the process. So I would say there's really no like standard recipe for making bread. But if you can find one that you like, stick with that one. And I usually say, I like at my website, I have one recipe called I actually just call it beginner sourdough. And that's kind of like the simplest approach.
Yeah, that's great advice. And actually I tell that to inexperienced home cooks all the time. You know, it's fun to experiment and try different things, but and I use an analogy. It's kind of like playing guitar and learning a song on a guitar. I mean, if you try the song once and move on to a different song, try it once, move on, you're never going to learn how to play any song. I mean, you really have to find what you like, find what works for you, and go a little bit deep and then get good at it. And then everything you learn by doing that, you can adapt to other recipes, other cooking techniques. So I think that's really valuable advice.
Exactly. Yeah. Another thing that it sounds like a simple or obvious, but one thing I always recommend to people that are beginning is try to kind of step back a little bit at, you know, several steps through the process, and just kind of try to assess what the dough looks like, what it feels like, maybe what it even smells like. And you want to look at the dough each time you bake at different spots and say, you know, does it look stronger than last time? Does it look smoother? What's the activity like? Is it really bubbly, or is it looking kind of dense? You know, and those questions, I think, they help you assess how the baking environment changes each time you're baking. Because one of the most important things about baking is that, you know, you're not just cooking in a vacuum. You know, there's temperatures, there's external temperatures that are in the dough. And something I like to relate it to is, people everybody's kind of familiar with making like pancake batter or waffle batter. And you notice that sometimes the recipes will say like, adjust the liquid to suit the flour you're using. Well, those kind of things are those intuitive feelings for how that batter is. It's the same with bread. You want to step back and say, it feels a little bit strong today. I might not need to do any more strengthening, or it looks like it's really active. Maybe I should cut my bulk fermentation step down a little bit. So those little steps of observation and assessment really, really help, and they help you kind of increase your consistency in baking in the future.
Yeah. And I suppose like anything, as you get better, those are sort of things you learn to do. I mean, I don't, like when you say it looks really strong, I don't know what that means, you know? Explain that a little bit. And I think the point is, as you do this more than once, twice, three times, you kind of start figuring out what it should look like and what it should feel like.
That's right. Yeah. And it's really hard to convey a lot of those things, especially just online. It's hard to show a picture and say, hey, look, this is what strong dough looks like to an uninitiated baker. They might not know what to look for. And so that's one reason why I try to post a lot of pictures and I try to have a conversation with people and say, you know, strong dough feels like this, or this is what it looks like. But even if you don't know any of that, even if you don't know what quote unquote strong means, just stepping back and trying to draw make a correlation between the dough at this stage on my first bake and the dough at this stage on my second bake. And then how is it different? That's really the key.
Okay. So here's a different twist. If you were advising someone trying to make sourdough for the first time, what would you say is one of the top mistakes they will probably make that will screw up the outcome of their bread?
One of the big things I see people struggle with at first is usually it's a lack of either strength in their starter, or it's just a lack of fermentation in the dough in general. So fermentation is very temperature dependent. If you notice your kitchen's a little bit cool, then you might need to lengthen the process out a little bit. If it's really warm, if you're in some place where it's hot and humid, 80 degrees Fahrenheit, then things might move a lot faster. And so you need to adjust. You need to adjust for that. But usually the problem I see in people that are just starting is that it's usually a lack of fermentation time overall, and their dough could use a lot longer time in bulk fermentation or just to lengthen the process in general.
Let's talk about time just real quickly, because one of the main things that I hear people say is they'd like to cook more, they'd like to bake more, they just don't have the time. So is this something that people can tackle? Because it sounds like there's a lot of time where you're not directly involved, right? You're letting your starter strengthen or whatever. And I actually found a great guide on your website, kind of a weekly baking schedule guide. Can you talk to, like, if I'm, you know, I've got a little bit of time, you know, how best would I marshal that time to try out sourdough?
Well, there's not a lot of time where you actually have to be in contact with the dough. It's just that the dough needs to have time to do its thing. And so, and your starter also. So what I'd say is I usually tell people, try to cut out a weekend where you're going to be home most of the time, just to do the process once or twice. And then after that, you'll get a good feel of when you have to be around to either fold the dough or shake the dough or even just bake the dough. So I'd say, you know, you can start Saturday morning one day. You know, you make your what's called a leaven, which is basically like your sourdough starter, but a little offshoot of it. And that's what's going to actually make your bread rise. Start that in the morning, and then you can mix in the later morning or early afternoon. And you can be around doing other things. You just got to be, when I say mix, that's when you actually have your hands in the dough. You're mixing. You start bulk fermentation, which usually takes about 4 hours. But during those 4 hours, you could be doing other things. You just need to check in with the dough and make sure that it's moving along. You do a couple folds during that time, which gives it more strength. And you only really need to do one or two sets of those. And you're usually pretty good. And that takes 5 minutes. And then the dough will sit for the rest of the time until you shape it. You shape it, you put it in baskets, put it in the fridge, and that's it for the day. Then the next day in the morning, you take it out and you bake it. And that's it. So there's only a few key spots in the process that you need to be. The rest of the time, you can be doing other things, you know, playing with your kids or whatever. You don't even have to be in the kitchen.
I talked to, this is just a quick tangent, but I talked to Derek Dillinger, who wrote a book called The Fermented Man. Have you read this book by chance?
No, it sounds interesting though.
Yeah, he decided, he's a brewer. He brews beer in the Northeast for kind of a local craft brewery. And he decided he was going to live for 1 year on nothing but fermented food.
Wow.
Like everything in his diet had to be fermented in one way or the other, which initially sounds terrifying. But when you really stop to think about it, there's a lot of food out there that's fermented, right? Salami, cheese, bread, chocolate. I mean, a huge variety of things we actually eat without second thought comes from a ferment process. So,
right.
I just thought about that off kind of out of the side of my brain as we were talking about fermented foods, but you might enjoy that book. It's really, really kind of a fun read.
Yeah. I'm going to have to look for that. I recently took a course here. It was a workshop actually with Sandor Katz. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he wrote The Art of Fermentation, which is basically like the fermentation Bible. And he had an interesting point at the beginning of one of his talks, and he said that pretty much all of the food that humanity over, you know, throughout the course of our history feels is tasty or delicious is fermented in some way. You know, in pretty much every condiment, like I think mustards are, vinegar, you know, wine. So, I mean, there, yeah, just anything is, has some portion of it fermented in some way. So I think his move is probably a good one. I think he's probably eating the best and tastiest food.
Yeah. Well, there were moments throughout the year when he was questioning his decision because he was traveling as well. So it kind of reminded me of people who have really strict dietary guidelines or lifestyles when they go out to eat with their friends. And it's like, well, I guess I'll have the salad, you know, they can't eat anything. And he was kind of in that boat, but it's a good book. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. But, so what are we forgetting? And we've kind of covered the broad strokes of sourdough bread. I think people hopefully will be interested and excited to maybe carve out a weekend and give this a shot. Are we missing any big points?
I think one thing that we haven't really talked about is kind of the health aspect of sourdough. So, you know, what got me interested in it, or why should somebody even want to do it? And I think, you know, if you look online and I start to see it's kind of like increasing, like you said at the very beginning, I think it's kind of a resurgence of this kind of bread, and even just fermented foods in general, but, kind of that long fermentation time that sourdough bread undergoes. You know, a lot of my recipes are 2-day recipes. You know, we talked about how it's not really labor intensive, but the time that the dough needs to fully ferment is what actually unlocks a lot of the nutrition in the grain itself. So breads that are, you might find in the store that are packaged in plastic and they're made, you know, in a couple hours in some cases. Those breads, sure, they're fine. If you want to eat those, that's fine. There's not, you know, I'm not judging. I'm just saying that the natural fermentation that happens with sourdough, it kind of pre-digests the grain in a way. And it's the same with most fermented foods. A lot of the minerals and vitamins that are in flour or in wheat or some other type of grain, kind of, they become more bioavailable and more unlocked for your body to absorb. And so that's something I think we're realizing more and more these days. And it's an important thing. And it's something that we shouldn't take lightly.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, I'm watching Michael Pollan's Cooked on Netflix. I don't know if you've seen that, but it's a 4-part miniseries. Have you seen it?
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really good. I was actually pleasantly surprised. I mean, I agree with Michael Pollan on a lot of points. I have a couple of nits to pick, but in general, I really, really enjoy it. And actually, his last episode, right, I think is Earth. It's the fire, water, air, earth is focuses largely on bread and sourdough bread and cheese as well. But that's a great episode. And he kind of, it echoes a lot of the sentiments you just gave us right there. So I agree. I think it's a great thing.
Yeah. And it's been a little while since I've seen it, but, he kind of talks about how a lot of studies nowadays are linking, you know, gluten intolerance or sensitivity to the industrialized process we have for a lot of foods, especially bread. That's not to say that it's going to solve everybody's gluten intolerance, because some people have, you know, real issues with it, but him and a lot of scientists are kind of stepping back now, and they're saying, you know, maybe we're missing something by trying to speed things up and make everything immediately available. So yeah, that's important.
Well, tell us where we can find you, Maurizio, online. I know you have a pretty cool Instagram page, all that kind of stuff. So, and I'll put all the links to these again in the show notes, but let's hear that.
My website's theperfectloaf.com, and that's where I post all my recipes and my instructive articles on how to make bread at home and kind of fit it in your daily schedule. From there, I'm pretty active on Instagram, and my Instagram name is just Maurizio. It's Maurizio. And I post a lot of my daily bakes there, and I'm on there pretty much all the time, just conversing with people and helping people. And then from there on Twitter and Facebook, I'm The Perfect Loaf. And I always tell people, you know, if you're starting out with baking and you get stuck and you have a problem with your starter, just head to my website and I have a little contact link up top and send me an email. I respond to every single person that emails. So I like to help people out.
Well, Maurizio, thank you so much. This was really enlightening. So I'm pretty excited to get back over to your website and download your recipes and give this thing a shot.
All right. Well, thank you, Roger. I appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to hearing from some of your audience.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Maurizio Leo of theperfectloaf.com. Again, if you want any of the information that we talked about right in front of your eyes in this episode, just head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/110 and you'll get to the show notes, the recipes, the links to social media and the other resources, books and whatnot that we talked about in this episode. And I hope more than anything that you're inspired to get in the kitchen and give sourdough bread a shot for yourself. In fact, I hope you're adventurous enough to try to make your own starter. That's a project I'm going to be working on myself very soon. And I also really recommend you take Maurizio up on his offer to head over to his website, send him an email, ask questions. He loves to interact with his readers, and he's always willing to give advice and feedback on everybody's sourdough project. So go check out Maurizio's website again at theperfectloaf.com. Well, everybody, that wraps it up for another episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. I hope you had a great time today. Maurizio was a great guest, and maybe someday off in the future when we get some more sourdough under our belts, we'll have him back on to talk about more complicated recipes or something like that. Again, if you'd like to send me an email, send me a note over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. And if you like the show and you're getting some value out of it, please tell your friends. That's a great way to spread the word and grow our little community here at the Kitchen Counter Podcast. So until next time, I'm Roger Anderson, the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking.